Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you for listening this morning. I know some of you might want to sleep in, but you woke up anyway, so I appreciate that. This morning we have a wonderful guest, Shai Reshef. He's the founder and president of the University of the People. It's one of the world's first tuition-free, yes, I said tuition-free online academic institutions. Mr. Reshef has been working in education for more than 20 years. He was working with Cramster.com. He worked with the Kidim Group. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. They were sold off to Kaplan. He was listed in Fast Company magazine as one of the most creative people in business in 2009. He's also featured in the New York Times and ABC News and a variety of other publications and media. Good morning, Mr. Reshef.
Good morning, and thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. Well, education is definitely a top priority for me. I have a child, and I think that that is a key to opening so many doors. So when I read about you in Fast Company magazine, I said, wow, I really want to speak to this guy. He's doing some innovative things and taking education to another level, and also opening up to people who may not have been able to have access to high-level or post-secondary education in the past because of the cost is so prohibitive. So let's start with, you've been doing education for a while now. Did you grow up maybe thinking about being a teacher?
No, actually, I studied Chinese politics. So that's as far as you can go from being a teacher. So
yes.
I studied at the University of Michigan, Chinese politics. I never thought that I'll be in education, I have to admit. So, yeah.
So, should I say ni hao to you this morning?
Oh, yeah, ni hao.
Ni hao. Wo hung hao, right?
Right.
Yeah, I have a little Chinese there, a little Chinese.
Yeah, I also have very, very little left.
Very little left, yeah. Okay, well, you can always go back to school, too.
I guess so. Well, all of us need to go back to school always.
Yes, well, learning keeps the mind sharp. Learning keeps the mind sharp. As a matter of fact, even with Alzheimer's, they found that people continue to learn that can ward off Alzheimer's. Now, so you didn't think you were going to get into education. You were in Chinese politics, which actually is probably a good thing. Now we need to understand Chinese culture. But right now you're in education. So you were chairman of Cramster, which I want to tell people is a great website for high school students and college students. That's www.cramster.com. And it's homework help for high school and college students. Math, science, and engineering study guides, lots of notes, homework help, tests that students can work on. So you went from Cramster to now the University of People. What made you take that leap?
Well, years ago, I was involved. I was the chairman of the first online university outside of the U.S. It was in the Netherlands, and it was through a collaboration with the University of Liverpool. It was early 2000, and it was quite a unique idea at the time. As I said, the first one outside of the U.S., and what we realized is that online university can be very effective, can go very far, reach people all over the world, people who are unable to go to school. However, it was very expensive, and for most of the people, it was a wishful thinking. It was a great tool, except that they couldn't use it. So last year when I got involved with Cramster.com, I realized how powerful a community of learners can be. And basically, Cramster.com is a place where students come to the net or to the social networking place and teach each other the homework which they don't understand. And the concept really was strange at the beginning, but the more I understood it, the more I liked it, and then the idea came of, wait a second, if people are willing to help each other for free, helping them with their homework, let's take this social phenomena and bring it to the academia, and we can have tuition free university. Obviously, that goes along with other things that happened in the world in the last few years, like open source technology and open courseware, things that enable us to use great material for free, and combining all of it together enable us to create this university.
Yes, yes. Well, that's the wonderful part. Now, how do you, I read about, how are you going to get your professors? These are people who are retired and they're volunteering. And what do you use as a, how do you decide who's going to be a professor in terms of their credentials?
Right. Most students are going, if I may describe for a second how the students are going to study, it will make it clearer. So students are going to be put together in classes of 20 with other students study the material. So they're going to study by themselves and with their peers, and anytime they have a question, they can ask in the classroom, discuss the questions with their peers, and teach and study with them. However, if there is anything which they don't understand, or if they want to go in depth to any topic, or elaborate on something that is not part of the class discussion, they can leave the class and go to the course forum. The course forum, and obviously everything is virtual, so
yes,
the course forum is a place where they would find not only all the students of the university who take the same course, but they are going to find volunteering professors and professional people and graduate students who are there in order to help them. So basically, we use professors, first of all, to write our courses, to lead the programs. They're all volunteers. And we also use volunteering professors, which, as you said, many of them are retired professors, to help the students with any difficulty they have.
Yes. And now you're going to have two majors. You're going to have business administration and computer science. Is that correct?
Right.
And
right.
You, and do you see, what other majors do you see in the future coming about?
Well, we chose this two programs for two reasons. First of all, because we aim, and we do have by now, and I can talk about actual students, we're students from all over the world. And it was very important for us that the programs will be relevant for all the students. So if you study computer science, no matter if you are in the US, in China, in Uganda, or in the Netherlands, you study the same program. So we
yes.
wanted programs to be international. The second thing was that they would fit our type of students. Remember that we mainly aim of students who were unable to attend school. We approach students who graduate high school, could have gone to a university, but didn't make it either because they didn't have the financial means or because in the place they live there just aren't enough universities to supply the demand, or because they live in a village and they cannot leave the village, go to the city to study in a university. And basically we want to give them a way to improve their standard of living, improve their knowledge and therefore their standard of living, their situation, their family situation, and obviously the more we have, we change the villages and cities and hopefully even countries.
definitely. Well, I mean, college is definitely, and the higher level of education you have, the more money that you're able to make. I mean, that's a fact that has been proven time and time again. So right now, where do you see most of your students coming from? And do you have more men than women or vice versa?
Right now, we are going to start the first semester with about 300 students. The first term is going to start in September, and we have students starting from over 40 countries. The number one country is actually Indonesia, but
wow,
you know, they are coming from all over the world. It's Indonesia, and some are from the U.S. and Brazil and China and Vietnam and Saudi Arabia. So it's really from all over the world.
I know you're working on accreditation, and how is that coming along, or when do you see that being resolved so that you can take in transfer students and give diplomas and things of that nature?
We built it to become an American university, and American university in the U.S., you cannot apply for accreditation before you're up and running. And it takes a few years of being actually in operation before you can apply. So it is our intention to apply for accreditation, but we cannot do it right now, so it's a bit premature, and I guess that we will do, we hope to do it as soon as we can.
Yes. Now, do you hope to work with other universities so that maybe collaborating like with MIT and saying, you know, someone wants to take one class with you and the rest of the classes with MIT or vice versa? Do you see that happening in the future?
I hope it will happen in the future. Right now, we use open course material, so we use courses of other universities, obviously courses that they put free online for mm-hmm. this very reason. So we do use it. I hope that in the future we will be able to work with other universities. We're thinking about it, we're trying to start working on it, but it's, you know, working with university, other universities is a long way, a long process. So
yes.
Hopefully it will happen, but it's not right now.
Right. So in terms of the fees, now we say it's a tuition free, but and I was reading that you're waiving the application fees this first term, correct?
Right, right. Right now it's free all the way, and we waive everything. In the future, we are going to charge students to apply to the university. So application fee would be between $15 to $50, depending on the country that you're coming from. The poorer the country, the cheaper it is going to be.
Yes.
Every time you take a test, you're going to pay an examination processing fee, which will be between $10 to $100, again, depending on the country you're coming from. So since as a regular American program, we're going to have 40 courses. So to complete a program will cost you between if you are coming from a very poor country, it will cost you about $400.
Okay, so about $400.
Yeah, and that's obviously if you don't get any help with it.
Yeah. So now in terms of the students, I mean, what types of students other than the financial issue? I mean, do they have to have really good grades? I mean, C average, B average, A average? I mean, I know there have to be some type of guidelines for your admission.
Right. Well, in order to be accepted, you need to show us a diploma of high school diploma. Mm-hmm. So you need to show us that you have 12 years of education and you graduated high school. We do not look at your grades. You're being a student is being a student start in two orientation courses, one in computer science and one English, and they need to pass these two courses to show us that their level, their academic level and English level is sufficient to study with us. So we want to see, and we need to make sure that they graduated high school, but the grade is not important. Anyone who has a high school diploma can get in. Obviously, if they're not good enough, they will not pass the first two courses, and they will not be able to continue. But the idea is to open the gates to anyone who was unable to do it before. So the idea is not to stop people from studying, but to the contrary, to help as many of them to study and to get academic education.
Yes, yes. I want to let people know about MIT and Yale. If you're interested in some more open courseware, you can go to ocw.mit.edu. They have open courseware there. And also at Yale, excuse me, oyc.yale.edu. Those are two wonderful sites for open courseware. Now, are you using any of those sites, Mr. Reshef, to help with your curriculum?
Yeah, we're using part of their material, and basically what we do, we ask the volunteers, and we have a lot of volunteers. We have by now over 1,000 professors who ask to help us. So we actually cannot use all of them even if we want, but we have a lot of professors who offer us help, and some of them are writing courses. They use part of the material that we use are based on material that was published by other universities. Some we write ourselves, but it is important for us that anything that we produce will be open as well. So people who would like to use our material and our courses can use it even if they're not becoming our students.
Well, that's
so,
wonderful. I mean, I just read in an article in the New York Times. It was about the organization Open Source for America, which is a conglomerate of a lot of software companies, Google, Oracle, Red Hat. And they were marching in Washington this July because they're trying to work with the government. Education sometimes has, a lot of people have been blocked from education, not just for financial reasons, but for classist reasons. People are trying to, I guess, a friend of mine called it the permanent underclass. What is your opinion of that?
Well, I think that there is, today the internet is there, and I think that probably one of the best things, that the best way to use the internet is for education. Because there was just recently a research being published by the Department of Education showing that online studies is in some ways better than traditional class setting. So the internet is there. It's clear today that people can use and benefit dramatically by using the internet. The freedom of information can bring it anywhere on earth, any knowledge anywhere, and we should use it. And the fact that people cannot get proper education, it's really a shame because it's there for them.
Yes. Now, according to there were some statistics, there are more than 11,000 college-level programs that were designed to be completely taught through distance education. 66% of these programs were reported as degree programs, and the rest are certificate programs. This is according to the National Center for Education Statistics. So you have 1,000 professors right now. As you grow, in terms of your administrative costs, do you have a facility to house a computer where that's storing the courseware, backing up the information? How will you handle your growth?
Well, basically, we feel that there shouldn't be a limit to our growth. There is no reason for us to stop growing. I mean, there are technical issues, there are coordination issues, there are control issues. We should handle all of them. But, you know, if you teach 1,000 students, there is no reason not to teach 100,000. And if you reach 100,000, you can teach a million and go on and on.
Yeah.
So really, I mean, you know, as long as you build it right and as long as you make sure that your quality is there and you have quality control over what you're doing, there is no reason to stop. And the world is so big and there are hundreds of millions of people all over the world that need this kind of education. I think that it's our mission to reach them. So we should try to reach them,
So what do you see as some of the issues? I read in the Wall Street Journal about the issues with Cramster and cheating and concerns of students sharing, you know, tests and things of that nature. Do you see that as an issue for the University of People where, you know, older tests might be up there and students are maybe using information to cheat and not really study or learn? Do you see that as a problem?
I don't see it as a problem, neither for Cramster nor for the university, because when you think about it, first of all, today there are quite few ways to check the people that use the computer. But, you know, I think that the most important thing is to realize that academia in general is based on trust. And when a student comes to a university, a regular university, a traditional university, and hand in assignment, does the professor know that the student wrote it himself? Does he know that he didn't cheat or someone else wrote it for him? You never know. When students get into a classroom, even for a test, are all the students all over the world really checked carefully that it's them and not their peers? So, you know, if students want to cheat, they can cheat. The thing is that we should not create a way that we are certain that 100% of our students can never cheat. The idea is that we do significant or we do enough checks to make sure that the students are the right students and they do their homework, and we have ways to do it, either between tests that we do, either starting with verifying very carefully the students we admit are the real student and they have the proper accreditation, and then checking them all along what they do reading what they write and then checking their exams. So it's, you know, there are 4 million students in the U.S. right now studying online. 20% of the students in the U.S. study, at least part of their studies online. Well, if it's a problem, it's a problem for the entire system, not only.
Yes, yes. So now where do you see yourself in 10 years from now? Are you still going to be with the University of People, or will you be starting some other nonprofit or purchasing another educational institution to help another area of the world, so to speak? Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
Well, I think that any time that you would have asked me, I couldn't tell you where I would be. Meaning, if you asked me 10 years ago, I didn't know about the university. So it's hard to predict. However, my intention is to stick with the university. I think it's a great thing. I think it's extremely important. It can grow so much and make such a big change that it needs a lot of energy and a lot of work to realize its potential. So I do believe that I will stay there. There is great things to do there, and I think I should do it. So that's
where you see yourself.
Yeah, that's what I see right now, at least.
How do you see yourself working with the United States government? I know recently Obama gave funds or earmarked funds for community colleges in the United States. Do you see that University People will be eligible to receive that type in the future, funding from the government to continue?
Right now, I don't know, because the way I read what is being offered, I'm not sure that we are eligible exactly, because it aims at community colleges and for producing courses. So I'm not sure, but in the future, no doubt that you know, I think that we are there because there is a need for what we offer. And the need is not going to decrease, but to the contrary, it's going to increase. Mm-hmm. And offering tuition-free education is something that the world needs. Not everyone can afford going to Harvard or Yale or NYU.
Definitely not.
And you know, the fact that you cannot afford it doesn't mean that you don't, you know, that you shouldn't go to a university. So what we offer is being needed, and we need the support in order to be able to offer it. So mm-hmm. I think it goes along with Obama's philosophy. So, yeah, I certainly hope that we will get the support, yeah.
Now I want to tell people the address is www.uofpeople.org. Again, that's www.uofpeople.org. Now, if someone's interested in...
Wait, can I?
Sure, go ahead.
It's you owe people, not you off people, you
okay.
owe people.
I'm terribly okay. sorry, you owe people.
Right.
So if someone's interested in volunteering as a teacher, they can go to the site. Is there application for them or that they can apply?
If someone wants to contact us for any reason, if someone considers to be a student, would like to support us in any way, be a teacher, write material or help us marketing, you know, anything, they can go to the site and offer the help, yeah? And we would love to get back to them and
do whatever we can
to work with them, yeah?
Is the registration for students closed for this fall semester, or are you still open and taking applications from students?
First of all, we always open. So we're not open for this term, we open for the next one. So the first term starts in, right now we have five terms. So the first term starts September 10th, and we are closed for this one, but we start another term in November.
November.
And for this term, we are open until, people can apply until September 17th. So
September 17th.
People can apply, and they send us all the documents we need and they're eligible, they can start in November.
And I want to mention again, as you said, the fees for everything right now have been waived. So if anyone's listening and they know of a student who's interested, this is the time to jump in. The doors are open. There is no application fee, correct? And right now, the first semester, there are no exam fees, correct?
Right. Everything is free. No payment whatsoever.
So there's no catch here, people. This is legitimate. And no, because you hear free and you're thinking, okay, when do I have to open my wallet? You know, when do I have to pull out the credit card, so to speak? Now, if someone does need help, say, paying for exams, do you accept, say, grants from the Department of Education or, you know, things of that nature, state grants or federal grants to pay for course exams?
Right now we're not taking any grants.
Okay.
But we hope that we will be able in the future to introduce scholarships and loans for our students, even, you know, the minimum that they will have to pay, not right now, obviously, but in the future, when they need to pay this minimum amount. I guess that some of them will find even this amount hard, and we hope that we will be able to help them with these fees as well.
Yes, unfortunately, that is the case. Sometimes even the smallest amount is very difficult for some people. And, you know, we say $10, $15, or you said, I think, an average of about $400 for, say, an American student to I guess, finish up. But, you know, that can still be prohibitive, you know, and the ability to offer scholarships or accept grants and things would, I'm sure, help so many people. How many American students do you have enrolled this semester? Do you know?
We have a few tens of them. I'm not sure about the exact number, but a few tens of them starting in September.
In September. And you said most of your students are coming from Indonesia, correct?
No. Oh. They're coming from 40 countries. It's
right,
the number one country.
But you said the number one was Indonesia, yes?
Yes, exactly.
And so do you have people on foot, so to speak, working to I guess publicize your school in the various countries, or are you working with departments of education throughout the world? How are you getting the word out about the university?
Well, right now, when we announced the program, we got quite a publicity all over the world, and that's
mm-hmm.
how people heard about us.
Okay.
The second stage, where we are right now at, is where people talking to each other. And that's where
okay.
we need most of the help for people, of the help for people to tell their peers, and for their peers to tell their peers to spread the word,
and so on.
Because we don't have marketing budgets. So the only
okay.
way for us to spread the word is by our students and our supporters to tell other people about us. And
right.
Yeah, we rely on them.
I see a caller here. If you're interested in asking questions, callers, please press the number one, and that way I know to pick up. We have about 2 minutes left. I want to thank you, Mr. Reshef, for coming on this morning. You've been wonderful, and I really, really wish you the best with this university, and I'm sure I will try to support you in other manners telling people about the university, because I think it's a great idea. And I want to thank the listeners this morning for listening on their computers and in the chat room and on your telephones. Thank you for joining me. Come next Saturday, 11 a.m. Eastern. Again, I'll be here Saturday mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm going to have Dr. Andre Brown from the Lewis and Clark Graduate School of Education and Counseling talking about post-traumatic stress disorder. We're going to be talking about what it is and how to detect it and how to treat it, the differences between women and men, and also veterans and how they're handling post-traumatic stress disorder, especially now with the war in Iraq. Thank you, Mr. Reshef, for coming on this morning.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
All right, you have a wonderful Saturday, okay?
You too, thanks.
Thank you, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food, it's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at pornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.